Ariella Zeitlin is with me. Ariella, hello.
Hello, hello.
What a pleasure to have you with me on Chai FM.
What a pleasure to be here.
I'm very, very, very happy about all this. The reason you are with me is because you took part in the South African Zionist Fed commemoration that was held, what, 4 days ago?
Yes, I did.
Thereabouts. Yeah. Tell me about what, you've got a New York accent, so there's lots to talk about. Let's start at the beginning. In fact, let's start at the event itself. What was your role? What were you doing there? I know you're a violinist.
Okay, so I am a Gamberger's artist coach. I help her with performances and with violin playing. And so originally I was just preparing her for her tour in South Africa. Then the South Africa Zionist Federation asked that somebody speak about her. And so they asked her mother, and her mother felt very uncomfortable with that because she's not a professional speaker. So they thought about who they could invite, and they said, why don't we invite Ariella? So, because, I mean, this is what I do. I perform around the world, and I, of course, speak in front of audiences, and I play the violin, and I sing, and I talk a lot about God. So they asked me if I would come. Of course, I was thrilled to come to South Africa, but I also said to them that I don't feel comfortable just coming and speaking about her as her coach. They have to let me play. And so I did.
So let's take me to the night. I unfortunately had every intention in the world to be there. It was the book launch of a Jewish author in South Africa, a very interesting book, which I'm going to talk about later on in the week. That's why I wasn't there. Tell me all about it. What happened? What did I miss?
Okay, so this event was to remember October 7th. And when we were planning for this incredible event, we were, of course, mourning. We all were saying, oh, the whole thing is about bringing the hostages home. And then up until, 3 days before the event, nobody really believed that the hostages would come home.
Yeah.
So on Simchat Torah, when, everybody here is in Chag, they're still scrambling to, okay, we're going to make a different event. So originally it was going to be very somber. And in the end, I think that it ended up being very, very joyous. It all ended in this massive dance party with thousands of people dancing, which I understand is a little unusual for South Africa. And I take all the credit because I always
because
make
it was you.
Because I always make sure
you.
That everybody dances. Absolutely.
Yeah. Just take me back to your story, because I had certain preconceived ideas in mind. I thought Agam Berger's violin teacher is going to be some Israeli coming in here with very, very bad English. That's not quite the case. I'm hearing an American, presumably, hola. No. What's your story?
So my name is Ariella Zeitlin, and I was born in the United States, and I made Aliyah when I was 17.
Okay.
I moved to Israel by myself. I don't come from a particularly Zionist home, and I didn't actually really know that much about Israel. I didn't know any Hebrew, and it was a little bit of a tension when I moved. But I moved to Israel, to Jerusalem, and I ended up going to school in Jerusalem and getting my degree. I have a master's degree from the Rubin Academy of Music. And I tour the world performing and playing my violin and singing. And, I talk a lot about, like I said before, I talk a lot about God and I talk about faith and, I give classes. And I wrote this amazing play called A Thousand Faces of a Hero, which I do at schools all over the world, which is a whole program that's all movie music. And the program follows the hero's journey, and we talk about how you can become the hero of your own story.
Beautiful.
Where the villain in our story, quote unquote, is the fears that we have to deal with and the voices in our head that kind of hold us back. And how do you...
incredible synergies between what you're doing and the person you're doing it
with,
Agam Berger.
Right, exactly. So I had written this play, and the whole, the whole concept of the play is how do you achieve your dreams by fighting this villain that we deal with. So when I put that play out, it was incredibly impactful. I crowdfunded for it, and a lot of the people sponsored tickets. We had hundreds of people in the audience, a lot of therapists, a lot of NOVA survivors, and a lot of people were very inspired by this concept and by this program. And after I put the show out, people started asking me if I would help them to tell their stories. So I have worked with soldiers and with NOVA survivors and with sexual abuse survivors and various people who have been through trauma to help them to reframe their stories in a way that helps them to share it and inspires and impacts their audience in a positive way, because all of us go through darkness.
You're blowing me away right now. Oh. I'm just listening to you talk okay. And I'm thinking, no, I mean, you're like at the cutting edge of exactly what is happening now.
Right.
You know, I sit here as somebody who hosts a radio show, and occasionally I'm told, well, you're going to be interviewing a hostage or a hostage survivor. Right. And my stomach literally goes into a knot, because mm-hmm. I think, how do you know? How do you know the right questions to ask? How right. do you know you're not going to say that wrong word right. that is going to trigger somebody and take them back to right. where you don't want them to right. go? How do you work this out? But, right. you know, I'm doing this once in a while.
I do it every
day. Doing
this
daily.
Yeah. Yeah, I do workshops, and I help people to put this together, and I also help coach.
Have you
people.
Learned certain sensitivities? Do you know where to push? Do you know when to pull back? Do you know what not to ask? I don't know. Do you end up crying? Is it inappropriate for you to cry along with somebody? Talk to me. How does one navigate this?
So I can only frame things from my perspective. I think that when I bring people in, it's actually very refreshing for them when they see that I don't try to sympathize with them. I don't try to empathize. I don't try to tell them I've been through what you've been through. I know what you feel. I say I have been through struggles in my life. Here are the difficulties that I have been through. And some of them I talk about publicly, and some of them I don't talk about publicly, but I've been through a lot. In order to become the person that I am today. And so I tell people my own personal story. Most of my own personal story is that I grew up in a neighborhood where drugs were very easily available, and I bought and I sold and I used.
Oh, wow.
So I have been clean now for 16 years.
You're giving me goosebumps, by the way. No, so, you look like a, you know, very well-adjusted. Right. You would never know right. looking at you
so,
that you've been.
So I've been in the 12-step program since I was about 22. And so I talk about my struggles and what I have dealt with. But I just was reading a wonderful book by Edith something. She's a psychologist, and she went through Auschwitz. And she became a psychologist after that. And she said that the worst thing that I went through was not that I went through Auschwitz. The worst thing that I went through was that in my own mind, I allowed my fear to control me after I left Auschwitz. Like I let the Auschwitz stay in my mind.
I understand what you're saying. It's just hard.
Right. Of course.
You know, God, I haven't been through that.
I'm just saying, I just happened to have read this book this week, and I was very inspired by what she said about that, because all of us go through struggles, every single person, and within a certain amount, right? So those of us with day-to-day little struggles, okay, but that's what you're used to, so it can feel like a very big thing, even though it's a very small thing. What you become used to is that's your maximum. Right. So until you've pushed your maximum, right? We see people who have been through major, major trauma, and you're like, what? But you don't know that you couldn't handle it if you went through it, because you've never had to.
Exactly.
You've never had to.
You think you've got an idea.
Right. But so, right.
Could
so,
probably surprise you.
So that was the direction that I was going. That basically every story has dark, like every one of us go through darkness. And the question is, how can we take that darkness and empower others? Whether that means that you come and you tell your story to other people who have been through the same thing or who are earlier in the journey. It can be very powerful for somebody who is in the early stage of addiction to come to a 12-step story and hear somebody who's been clean for 20 years. You know, oh, that makes it achievable for me. So, or like I see that I could achieve it because you're telling a story that sounds like my story. Does that make sense?
It absolutely makes sense.
So that I do a lot of work with trauma survivors. And when they called me to work with Agam, I actually have not done any public speaking with her because she's not ready to speak publicly. Mostly I prepare her for her concerts to play the violin. But I'm very trauma-informed.
Is there a line that you're scared to cross? I mean, I would imagine it's quite an intimate relationship because you're talking about feelings and survival and all these.
Right.
I mean, is there a line that you do not cross? I can't be friends with this person because I'm seeing her in a different kind of light. It's just a difficult place to navigate.
So in my work with her specifically, I came in kind of with a certain look. I thought that she would be a certain way. Uh-huh. And she was totally not like that.
Interesting.
She's very tough. And what she needed from me and what I've been kind of for her in our relationship, she needed me to be sunshine. She needed me to come up, show up with a good attitude and a can do and push her to her maximum with her violin playing. Because she hadn't touched her violin in years, not to do with Hamas, but not to do with being in Hamas captivity. Even years before that, she hadn't touched her violin.
It's just so interesting because, I mean, it's just so fresh for all of us. I mean, I don't mind you, I've been streaming Israeli news for the past week, all day, day, every minute. And I saw Matan Zangauke come out of, and I mean, he's playing a piano already. And I would have thought he wouldn't have touched it. He would have just, and yet it seems to be a really integral part of his recovery. Was it the same for Agam? Was this something reclaiming yourself that somebody took from you? Or how do you think she perceived it?
I think that her mother, when she was a hostage, shared a certain photo of her with her violin, and that became, she became the girl with the violin.
Okay, interesting.
And when she came out, there was a lot of pressure on her to be the girl with the violin, and I don't know that she defines herself as the girl with the violin. So I think that she's happy to be performing, and she's happy to come back to it, but the pressure and the amount of, you know, phone calls that her mother is handling every day. She gets hundreds of phone calls and she has to deal with.
Yeah, they didn't sign up for this. They were normal people living normal lives and suddenly their names is on every street and their pictures on every corner.
Right.
I mean, it's overwhelming what's happening to these people.
Right. So I do a lot of mindset work with both her and with her mother because she, I mean, it's just, it's a lot.
It is a lot.
It's a lot. And, but most of the work is mindset that you were sent here. You have been given this kind of mission right now. And this is what everyone, you know.
It's very, very humbling. Very, very humbling. I mean, I don't know. I know you've been in South Africa and you've clearly been enjoying what this place has to offer. And we're going to talk about that in just a moment. Oh. But while you've been in game parks and wherever else you've been, Eli Sharabi's been talking to the press quite a bit about his new book that he's just published.
Yeah, I just read it.
You read it already?
Yeah,
I mean, that man is just, he's going to be the new Franz Kafka. He's going to, Viktor Frankl. Mm-hmm. This man is. It can't be that you can experience the loss that he has experienced and still be so positive. Right. It defies understanding.
He's so powerful. I just read his book, and he is just mind blowing.
What's it called?
Because Hostage.
Hostage.
It's called Hostage. He's mind blowing in the way that every situation that he comes through and every chapter, it ends with a spin on how and a lesson on how to stay positive in horrible times and how to keep your chin up and how he fought and he didn't allow himself to sink into a depression and he kept holding everybody else up and he kept telling them how to think and what to think about. And I think that he worked on a kibbutz before.
Yeah, absolutely, as left-wing and as secular as they come. And that's also something that has struck me really, really, really hard. And it's nice talking to somebody who's relatively religious. I can see by your head covering that you are, which is why I didn't lean in to give you a kiss hello out of absolute respect when I met you. But it is interesting because many appear to have come out and have found, I don't know if they found God, I don't know if they found Judaism, but they found something. They fasted on Yom Kippur, they didn't have any food. Mm-hmm. They celebrated Shabbat with the little bit that they had. They found a religiosity that I never expected left-wing secular kibbutznikim to find. Somebody once told me, Simon, there are no atheists in the trenches. And I'm beginning to think that there's a lot more to that than I believed at the time. I'm beginning to think because.
So I think that Eli Sharabi would not, I don't know, he doesn't talk about God at all or belief in God at all in her captivity.
In the interviews.
He does? Okay.
Yes.
Because in the book he doesn't mention God. He talks about how he is secular and happily secular and he would never want to be religious. That's interesting.
Well, he's moderated that message. That's really interesting. Okay, because the book is fresh.
Right. It's interesting. It could be as, you know, I have no idea. So, but that didn't, that in the book it, he says, I am happily secular and I have no, okay, it's all good.
Karen just says, by the way, incredible conversation. Kol hakavod, keep going. Wonderful. So there we go.
Thank
all
you,
all right,
Karen.
So let's get to the, you're an American. I would imagine visiting South Africa wasn't the number one place on your list of priorities. How did you react when they said you're going to Africa?
Are you kidding me? I was thrilled to come to Africa. And why? I have been...
Why? We are so anti-Israel, our government, not our people. There's a massive difference. But I mean, we haven't done ourselves any favors. We shot ourselves in the foot. As an observant Jewish woman, Zionist, living in Israel, would you not have thought there are better places I can go to than that Verstunken place?
I disagree. I think that part of my mission in the world is to go everywhere. I have a lot of very powerful messages that I want to share, and I think that they're important for everyone to hear, and not just people, I don't know, in the United States, or I don't know where you think. I don't know where you think that it's safer. Where do you think that it's safer than Johannesburg?
It's not a matter of safer or not safer. So I didn't even raise the issue of safety. It was a measure of politically, and where am I going to be welcomed and felt that I'm at home, and, you know.
I have told everyone that I'm from Israel. I go around with my head covering, and most people are thrilled, very excited, you know, interested. They're curious. Some people were there. Nobody was outright nasty. Nobody's been outright nasty.
No, listen, when I was visiting New York City, I was too frightened to go up to the Columbia end of town. I didn't want to have to deal with what was there. It's much easier being a Jew in South Africa right now, I think, than being a Jew in New York City. And our mayor isn't as anti as your future mayor there will be, Mr. Mamdani.
So
and
I'm
Co.
not. I'm not from New York. I'm not from New York, and I didn't. I grew up in a town called Baltimore, which is.
It's not too far away.
It's not too far away, but it's a very different culture.
That's interesting.
And the neighborhood that I grew up in was half Jewish and half black. I mean, I think that New York is probably it's different. I mean, different places.
Sure.
I don't know how it is.
I don't have too much time looking at the time. What surprised you or delighted you about your visit here?
I had the best safari experience that anyone could possibly have. I saw a cheetah kill.
Oh, wow.
And I saw like an elephant almost stampeded us.
Oh, my goodness. We had the whole shebang.
I saw every single animal that you could possibly see, except for I wasn't looking for bugs, so I'm not sure how many bugs I saw. But I was blown away. And that was one thing. And I love the people of Johannesburg. Every person, I'm just
you didn't
get
to Cape Town, hey?
I am obsessed with the people of Johannesburg.
Okay, no, you're allowed to be. We are good people, there's no question.
Okay.
Ariella, we've been, my controller's telling me you're out of time. All what right. an absolute pleasure it has been to have you in studio. I can understand why you do what you do. You are a ray of light. You walk into a room and you just light up the space. You've got something very special.
If anybody is listening and would like to follow me online, my handle is Ariella Zeitlin Music on Spotify, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Go ahead and find me.
And she's
Ariella with two L's.
She's worth it. Craig, take it away.